Hi, it's Clint and Lyndon.
Welcome to Shove It Up Your Arwen.
As always, our opinions are our own and should be taken with a pinch of salt.
At the sound of the Arwen cow, enjoy the episode.
Awaiting. Oh. Hello and welcome to Shove It Up Your Arwen. I am one of your hosts, Clinton. You can find me on Instagram at Clinty Sky Guy. Why is this so difficult? Your turn.
It always is. Every episode is a struggle. And I'm the twat that helps him.
That'll do. Who are you?
I can't. Lyndon. Pilgrim in the Mist on Instagram.
Lovely. Marvellous. And today, we're going to talk about Desmond Tiny.
Mr. Destiny.
And probably touch on fate and shit like that.
Yeah.
Is it still repeating on you?
Always.
So much cock, so little time. Anyway.
I'm a voracious eater, what can I say?
Sausages everywhere! Do you have a magic moment?
Yes.
Oh, you do. Go on then.
Yes. Well, I can't really talk about it.
Oh, for fuck's sake! What even is the point of you?
There isn't one.
Ah.
I just linger.
That was easily solved.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so what can you talk about?
Not a lot. My existence can be summed up to, like, you know when you get a pain in your knee for no reason? You've not done anything. You haven't been anywhere. You just stood up.
You just turn up.
And then
unannounced.
Yeah.
Get in the way.
Inconvenient.
And then fuck off.
Yeah. Inconvenient. Completely pointless. There's no reason for it. It's just there.
Oh, I love you so
much,
like dear.
That's like me.
Chicken.
So.
That's going to become a thing.
It is. So, my magical moment. Okay, so it's. I can't really go into too much detail.
Don't
because
then.
It's, I'm not going to.
All right then.
Jesus Christ. Chill out. Fuck.
Oh dear.
Basically, I've had a lot of times recently where I've prayed for things and they've happened. But I can't talk about what I've prayed for because that kind of... It's not really how it's done. It's not the done thing, is it?
So what happened, though?
Well, the things that I asked for happened.
Well, yeah, but you don't have to talk about the prayer, but you can talk about the thing that happened.
But if I talk about the thing that happened, then you'll know what I prayed for.
Oh, this is hard work, isn't it?
Yes.
Hello, love.
Your stomach.
That's my stomach.
Well.
You Catholics are hard work.
Yes.
Just.
I know. Intentionally.
Why?
It's a mystery.
It's a mystery.
And we like our mysteries. Oh, I don't know. I can't talk about any of them. I don't want to talk about any of them. They're personal. They're between me and Jesus.
Jesus.
So.
Oh my God, my stomach is proper going. Oh, that's gross, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so your magic moment is you prayed for stuff and it happened.
And stuff happened, yeah.
But who did you pray to?
Well, God, oddly enough.
Well, no, but you're not meant to do that. You're meant to get a saint to intercede on your behalf.
No, I can pray to God. Directly to God.
And you still got things for yourself?
I didn't say that for myself.
Well, then that's what I'm getting at.
Oh, then.
So you can give us a little bit of detail.
No. I prayed... I prayed
for a friend.
For other people.
No, for other
people, not
lovely.
Necessarily friends. For other people. And I also prayed for things that I was connected to but didn't necessarily affect me. And it yielded good fruit. But yeah, I prayed to God. I'm not going to... I mean, I do sometimes pray to saints, but I didn't on this instance. I prayed directly to the big man upstairs.
Okay.
And yeah, that was it.
And that was it?
That was it.
You prayed directly to the big man upstairs for other people and it worked.
It worked.
Well, that's...
Boring. What about you?
I'm just trying to think, actually. I've not had a lot of magical moments. Most of my stuff was around Samhain and the death of a friend. So a friend of mine who long story cut short, we met at the Grove that I was part of. The Grove folded and we kind of fell out, didn't really fall out, but we kind of took a break from each other.
Mm-hmm.
We got embroiled in drama that wasn't ours, really, and it just caused a lot of shit. So then I found out she had brain cancer, and we kind of reconnected. Anyway, my magic moment, I think, is the last time I saw her. So I saw her... oh, I haven't had a chance to catch up with you about this, but anyway. I saw her maybe two and a bit days before she died.
Oh, wow.
And I visited her at the home that she was in. She was dying of brain cancer. And I went over. I spent like nearly 4 hours with her. Turned up. We just hung out. I'm not that person who goes over to go, well, how are you doing? What's happened now? Where are you up to? I'm not interested. As far as I'm concerned, you know enough about what's happening. You don't need to tell me and go through it again. You're going to have that conversation again with everybody else. You don't need to have it with me. I frankly don't care, really, to know about... And I know this might sound harsh, but I don't care to know about what's wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
I care about... how we can make you feel good in this moment right now.
No, I see.
I'm interested in what can I do? How can I be the person you need at the moment? If it then transpires that you need to tell me, fine. But I will not ask. I am not interested. I will do what I need to do to be your friend in that moment. So she told me once what was going on. We never had that conversation again. We never needed to until something changed. And then she told me it changed. And then that was like, shut up, stomach. And then that was like 30 seconds of the conversation and we spend like hours just chatting. Anyway, we were talking and we were chatting about what next. She was telling me about the big day, which was her funeral. And saying this is happening, that's happening, the other happening. And
see ya.
Sorry, my daughter leaving. And I said to her, so what's next? And she went, what do you mean what's next? And I went, well, where are you going afterwards? I said, you've got all the goddesses in your room. All of her statues of her goddesses were in her room. I said, and it's coming up for Samhain. So what's next? Where are you going to go after this adventure's over? What's the next big adventure you're going to have? And she just went, oh, I'd not thought about it. And I went, well, where would you like to go see the Kailiach? I said, you've got Isis and Sekhmet. Serket to go and visit. I said, or Hecate, who was your goddess for the longest time, who I saw once. That was fucking absolutely terrifying. But I'll save that for another magical moment.
I think you told me about this.
Yeah.
In the woods.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Best thing. She was the most powerful witch I ever knew, this woman. And I will always say that, even till the day she died, because even in her final moments... So we had this conversation and she was like, I think I'll go to Hecate. I think Hecate's been taking me in installments anyway because she had brain surgery that take a bit out. And she said, so Hecate's already got a bit. And we had a laugh about that. Apparently, after that, we had this long conversation. We were talking about it. After that, she kind of went downhill. And all she talked about was Hecate's coming. And she was saying, Hecate's coming to get me. Hecate's coming. I can see her. I can see the goddess. The goddess has come to collect me. And then she passed quietly into the arms of her goddess. It was like the most absolutely incredible thing. And then her big day was November 1st. So literally like Halloween, like Samhain, like All Souls Day. All Souls? Is it All Souls or All Saints or whatever? I don't know. So she was laid to rest on Samhain, really. It was absolutely awesome. It was the best thing. And, you know, really sad for her family, really hard for her family, but she faced the whole thing with no fear. And, you know, I would like to think that as her friend, I helped her face it with no fear so that she could look at what was coming next with a sense of reverence and importance and a sense of mission, like, well, that's what I've got to do next, that's the job next, that's what I've got to do. And she left her family in the capable hands of the people that she'd left behind with them, you know, to look after each other with the lessons and all the rest of it. And she kind of just, she was scared for her, what she was leaving behind, but she wasn't scared about what came next. And that was like good. The most amazing thing I've ever experienced or seen with someone.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, yeah. My condolences for your loss and for everyone that knew her.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you had that experience.
Yeah, it was really good. Really good. I'm glad she had that experience.
Yeah, and that you were able to be there for her and kind of help her with it. That's good.
Because I often think that that's the conversation no one ever has.
No.
You know? And it's... I think it was a really good conversation for her to be like... in a position to have with somebody who understood where she was coming from.
It's a difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I think I know there's a lot of people out there that like to fool themselves into thinking death isn't scary and, you know, oh, I've got, you know, I'm like when people consider themselves within the spiritual community, people that work around death and surround themselves with death, and whether they consider themselves like a death medium or a death witch or a death whatever. Even priests struggle with it. I had a client a completely different set of circumstances, but like I had a client months ago, and she had stage 4 breast cancer, and I was combing her hair, and like her hair was just coming out in clumps. There was barely anything left.
Yeah.
And she was crying, obviously, but she had accepted it. But then it's like, I've never dealt with someone, well, apart from my granddad, but we didn't really talk. So apart from that experience, I've never had to deal with anyone dying of cancer before. So I didn't know what to talk to her about, because I thought, well, you're not going to be interested in inane conversation. I can't exactly say, so what are you doing today? You going on holiday anywhere? You doing...
Yeah, all the hairdresser training is out the window. Yeah,
she's dying.
Yeah,
and then I don't want to talk to her about her cancer and her treatment, so I can't talk to her about that. And she was very... It was quite sad for her. I did feel for her, because there was no hope in anything she said. Everything was so crestfallen, so negative, so you know, there was no faith to fall back on, there was no joy, there was no hope. It was just, well, I'm just gonna die and that's it. So I couldn't talk to her about anything, so we just sat there in silence while I did her hair, and it was like the most uncomfortable thing ever. So I'm glad you were able to give your friend peace, because I would have been crap in a situation like that. But I suppose because I've had no experience with people in that situation, maybe. People going through... I've got quite a few clients where they've got loved ones that have Alzheimer's or dementia.
Yeah.
I've dealt with that twice.
Yeah.
So I can talk to them about that. Mm-hmm. Not a problem. But, yeah, anything else. So, yeah.
I mean, I think this is a good segue, actually, into our topic. Because we're talking about, like, destiny and predestined things. And, I mean, just to touch back on it, I think... the lesson that helped me deal with this with my friend was when Wayne had those mini strokes that he had.
Oh, yeah.
And he was in the car. And I was driving at 130 mile an hour down the A14 to get him to the... because it was the second stroke he'd had in less than 24 hours. So I was of the opinion, if he survives this, it will be a miracle. This is before we knew that they weren't actually strokes. They were something else. But I was like, your face has fallen to one side. He was slurring his words. His words weren't making sense. He had no strength left in him. And he was sat in the car. Within minutes, I'd got him dressed, shoes on, sat in the car, 130 miles down the A14. And he was going, I love you. I don't want to die. I wish we'd gotten to spend our whole lives together. I wanted to grow old with you. And I was going, it's okay. Absolutely fine. No tears, no wobble in my voice, completely calm. And I was just going, this is what I need him to hear.
Yeah.
If he's going to die right now, I want him to hear in the clearest voice, in the calmest way possible, that I am not afraid and that I love him. And that's all he should hear in his final moments. And I thought that because only weeks previously I'd watched a comedian who said she'd had brain surgery. And after brain surgery, they want you up at the bed so they need to see whether you've kept motor function and all the rest of it. And she said her sister was there. Anyway, she started vomiting blood and she was like freaking out. And her sister was just like, it's okay. This is meant to happen. You're absolutely fine. don't worry about it. Anyway, they calmed her down. They got her cleaned up, got her back into bed. She fell asleep. When she woke up again, she turned around to her sister and she went, I'm so glad you were there. I'm so glad you said all those things. It really helped me. She went, did they tell you that I was going to be all right? She went, fuck no, I just didn't want you to die scared. I was just like, do you know, and that's all I could think in the car. And I think that kind of prepared me for this interaction with my friend in the home. Was like, I know that you have enough to worry about thinking about your family and friends. You don't have to worry about what comes next. So we're going to have that conversation in a calm, protected, safe way where we can just dish it out, you know? And I think that is sometimes the issue, that we get wrapped up in the emotion around something that we consider final, like destiny. If you think something's predestined, you can only face it when you drop all the shit and the narcissistic worrying bollocks, and you face it head on, and you either accept it, and actually it turns out to be not a problem because by accepting it you resolve it, or you face it, get through it, and then the cleanup is much easier because you've not made a mess by being an emotional twat. You've only dealt with the very minimum amount of fuss.
Yeah, compartmentalizing emotions. It does happen. When my mum had her stroke, that's exactly what happened. I just dealt with it. What it was. It was happening, and it was like, okay, this is happening. So I held her up and supported her because she'd lost it all on her left side, so she was leaning and like falling over. So I was holding her up on a chair. They came, loaded her on the stretcher, and then they took her outside the salon to load her into the ambulance. And as I walked to the door, Wendy gave me a hug and I crumpled and tears came out. But literally by the time I'd gotten out the door and onto the pavement, I'd sucked it all back in. It was buried and I was in the ambulance with dry eyes. And yeah. I was like, we're going to be okay. You're going to be all right. Yeah. Don't worry about it. We're on our way.
It was when they took Wayne away to the other hospital and I couldn't go in the ambulance. And I cried a little bit and then I was absolutely fine. I didn't really have the emotional response until about 4 days later, after the next time he had to go into hospital for the third one, and they wouldn't let me in. And then he got himself out of the hospital, I took him home, and then he ended up with another ambulance turning up to take him back into hospital, and I convinced myself I'd done it wrong, and then that was it, and that was, I was never going to see him again because they wouldn't let me back in to help him or to get him or bring him home. And I fell to bits in the car and I couldn't drive home. I had to sit in the car for 40 minutes and just put myself back together to try and be like, right, I need to just...
It's important to get it out there.
You know, sort this out. But yeah, that was absolutely fine.
It's good to let the healing waters flow.
Shut up. You disgust me. But anyway, on kind of like a happier note, although we went into that was dark, but needed. Like, destiny. What is
destiny?
Destiny!
The great beyond.
Fuck off my face. What have you done?
Nothing.
What have you done?
I flicked a switch.
Don't flick switches. Which washes? Which witches watches? Anyway, destiny. So, what's the definition of destiny for you as a Catholic? Because I'm interested.
The will of God!
Oh, that was quick and easy. Is it really that simple? It's what Jesus tells you to do.
No, it's one of those annoying things. It's, and I really hate it, when people go, God has a plan.
Fuck off.
And it's ineffable.
I hate when people use big words, because it's like, ineffable. The fuck does that mean?
It means nobody knows. It's unknowable.
That's better. That's a much, much...
But why would I waste my time saying multiple words when I can just say ineffable? Well,
no, why would you say ineffable, which no one understands, when you could say unknowable?
Well, educate yourself, cunt.
Oh, what a challenge. You bitch. I'm gonna fucking smash your teeth in.
Do it!
Okay, so it's an unknowable...
God's plan is unknowable because God is unknowable. How do you quantify a cosmic being that knows all, is all, has always been, will always be?
Well, it's you and me, isn't it?
You can't.
Well, it's just.
You just can't. So there's no point in trying. But
it's like the great web, the great The Great Web of Weird.
Ben's an expert on that.
Ben is an expert, but our lovely Ben.
Lovely Ben. Daddy Ben.
Daddy Ben. Oh,
shameless whore.
Fuck's sake.
You whore of Babylon.
You say it yourself, dear.
I do. Daddy Ben.
Daddy Ben.
Lovely so, Ben. From a Catholic point of view, it's a sticky wicket. There's a lot of stuff within Catholicism. What?
Sorry.
Sticky wicket.
I use the term sticky wicket to describe somebody. Go on.
It is a sticky wicket.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things within Catholicism that
Catholicism
won't get a satisfactory answer on.
Oh, really? Oh, because no one knows that. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
May I finish?
If you must. Sorry.
I must. I'm compelled.
By the will of God!
Yes. Because there's mysteries, and we're not meant to fully understand the mysteries. And just as you start to uncover layers of the mysteries, there's more layers to the mystery. So no one really knows for sure, which is why I have a big issue when people start throwing around the word heresy. You say one wrong thing in Catholicism, and people are like, heretic? Okay. I was talking with Father Daniel about the Trinity, and I referenced it the wrong way.
Oh, my word.
And he said, and I love Father Daniel, but he said, he was like, you have to be careful when you say things like that because you're starting to step into heresy. And I was like, but what is that?
Bitch, I bathe in heresy. I polish. Nothing. I'm shutting up.
You're cock in heresy. I know what you were thinking. But, like, you look at the Orthodox Church and what the Orthodox Church
says.
That's
why they call it bashing the bishop.
Yes, heard it.
Sorry.
When you look at the Orthodox Church, there's a lot of things within the Orthodox Church that the Catholic Church considers a heresy and vice versa. And then with the Protestant Church.
Yeah, but they're still members.
And then you look at. Yeah. And then you look at. Well, yes, but there was the Great Schism!
You can get a cream for that.
But you can, yeah. But then you look at what the church considers now to what the church considered 600 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago. They would consider what they thought back then to be heresy. So,
that was good.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just because you don't understand something doesn't make it a heresy.
That's a declaration.
Just because you ask a question doesn't make it a heresy.
Oh, no, so no questions are heretical. Questions are definitely heretical.
Definitely heretical. So I it depends on what the heresy is, I suppose.
See, so within...
But with regards to, getting back to the main point, with regards to the will of God, we also have to take into consideration that we have been given the gift of free will. So there is... I know. See, this is the conundrum. So there is...
Like, it's all a divine plan, but you're allowed to do what you want.
There's this kind of overarching plan... But then we get free will. But then you can kind of, the more you dig into it, you think, but do we actually have free will? Because if God already knows what's going to happen, then clearly it's not my choice. It's free choice is an illusion. But is it? I don't know. It's really, and this is why it's a mystery, because you can't fucking answer the question.
Okay, so I have an answer to that. Because I always think this when, because I had this argument with, I have a lot of arguments with Mark.
Yes.
Through Wayne.
Okay. He's the medium, is he?
He's the medium for my arguments, because Wayne comes back with information from Mark, and I think Wayne does it on purpose now, to then get my opinion on it, and I think, and Wayne is very articulate, but I think there are some things that I articulate in a way that Wayne's like, oh, I'll have that, and then he throws it back at Mark when he next sees him by going, well, Clinton said... And I'm just like, oh, fuck's sake. But there are times where I'm just like, you can't limit God. So for you to say, and I'm not picking fault with what you said, because actually I agree with it. God has a plan. God knows all things. That doesn't come from the pretext of he knows what's going to happen next. Well, that means you're limiting God through time, but God transcends time.
Yes.
So it's not that he knows what's coming next. It's the fact that he is what's coming next. The same as he is what happened before, and he is what's happening now.
Yes.
So there isn't the concept of he knows what's going to happen is limited, because actually it's not so much that he knows what's going to happen, it's that he just is. Full stop. He is future, past, present, all of the above, and none of it, because he's not limited by it.
I feel like that's just answering the same, saying the exact same thing in a slightly different way.
It is.
Erase the fact that...
It is, but it's taking away the liminality. If you remove the liminality, it gives you a little bit more understanding about how, even though you have free will is still part of the mix. It's not that he controls free will, it's that he is as much the future as he is the past and the present. So your free will is free will, but he's already experienced it because he's going to experience it when you experience it. Make sense?
Yeah, but it's still saying the exact same thing in a slightly different way. You're not erasing the fact that God knows what's going to happen.
No.
So therefore we could argue that free will is an illusion.
No, that's not...
Because it still conforms to the will of God.
No, 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 that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. It's not conforming. It's the fact that the knowledge of something is only because there is no limit to how he experiences it. So he's experiencing... So if you are connecting with God now, you are connecting with a spirit that is living in every moment, future, past and present, all currently. There is no...
You have an eyelash.
Do I? Thanks. That was my eyelash.
You're
just
sticky.
Just my face.
There, look. You're sticky.
Make a wish.
No, I'm still here.
No. There we go. Done. So, it's not so much that... It's taking away the liminality completely. It's not that he knows. It's that he just is. He doesn't know because... You haven't experienced it yet. He knows because he's already been there, done it. He is all things. So he's experienced your free will. It's not he's influenced your free will. He just knows it's coming because when it happens, he'll be there with you doing it as well at the same time.
Yeah, I still feel like it's the same thing in a slightly different way.
Okay, fair enough.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. I just feel like it's exactly the same thing in a different way.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Fair enough. Anything else?
No. What about you?
Okay, so that's interesting as well, because what I was going to say earlier was that it's interesting to think of destiny as a... So in Catholicism, is it a prefixed thing? It just is. That's the plan. That's what's going to happen.
It just is. No one knows it. It just is.
You can't access it. Or do anything with it. It just is.
Well, no, because it's the will of God. No one has access to God.
Yeah, so...
Except through the Son.
Ah.
But even then, you don't have access... Well, we have access to Jesus, and Jesus is God incarnate. So we do have access to God in that way.
So if you convince Jesus to make ferrets lay eggs, it'll happen.
Yes, but why would I do that?
I don't know. Why not? Sounds like fun. I fucking love ferrets.
Okay.
Anyway, and I like eggs. Why not? Combine the two. So, in pagan circles, there's an idea that fate is mutable and changeable, and you can interact with it. It's not a... it's not a solid construct. It's a fluid construct that is ever-changing, ever-moving, ever-weaving... And that you can influence or pluck at the threads of said plan or fate or destiny and, you know, effectively change that. I think there's elements of flexibility even in that idea. I think sometimes people think that destiny is a solid thing at the end. Your destiny is to do this one thing. Your fate... You're fated to, and fate is the journey. Destiny is the
destination.
Destination, yeah, pretty much, yeah. There you go. So fate is the way you get there. You're fated to achieve your destiny, which is this one.
But then,
thing.
Like, there's this whole concept, isn't there, with like luck and fortune and stuff within paganism. So,
yeah,
like,
of course
you make fortune charms and lucky like talismans and things like that. And you don't make lucky talismans, talismans are what they are, but you make like
amulets,
thank you, and other things to influence. And like the ancient Greeks would give offerings to certain gods to alter their luck, to increase their chance and better their fate, and try and change like the outcomes of certain things in their favor.
But then, see, I do that. I think that's the thing I do most of the time. I don't really, I think I've kind of shied away from big ritual and big spell work.
You just started like pissing on things and making cum sigils.
No,
throwing dirt not even. Around. I've got a jar Spider-Man. Of dirt.
I got a jar of dirt. Not even that. Like, just I still do a lot of divination. I think I've been kind of working a bit more on seership, and rather than looking at things with a medium to figure out what the symbols mean, you know, cast the bones, but actually just looking to see past the veil through meditation and through like mindfulness and stuff like that. Because generally you kind of see the future by looking at the now, which is quite interesting. And if you look hard enough, if you look hard enough at the now, the picture reveals itself for the future. And it's quite interesting that actually that's somewhat simpler and easier. And then when you get your cards or your runes or whatever out, all it is just verify and verification.
Do you think as well with the future, I mean, we see it a lot in Christianity and Judaism, and Islam, because we're all cousins in faith.
Oh, what a horrible phrase.
Cousins in faith?
We're all cousins in faith.
We are, we all worship the same God.
Oh, God.
Except they don't acknowledge Jesus as God.
That's so lovely.
Fuck you. But, like, the Bible is filled with prophecy and filled with prophets that have come to not only, like, they perform miracles through God's grace, but they are there to speak about the coming Messiah, Jesus. But you look at when Jesus came and the way the Jews react, because he isn't how they've been led to believe. So, like, prophecy is one down to interpretation, but also it's not guaranteed.
I saw a brilliant cartoon the other day.
Oh God!
Of a man and an alien talking about Jesus.
Oh yeah.
And the man turned around and said, so you've got this planet and whatever. What about Jesus? Do you know about Jesus? And the alien goes, oh yeah, great guy. Great guy, he comes to our planet twice a year and we gather up all of our best chocolate and we give him all of our best chocolate. He does great things for our communities and then he buggers off. And so we spend the rest of the other half of the year building our stocks up so we can give him more chocolate, and then he delivers us all this stuff, and then he comes back. We see him twice a year and he went, and the man turns around and goes, we've been waiting 2,000 years for the second coming. How come you get him twice a year? And the alien goes, well, how many times has he visited you? And he goes, once. And they go, well, what did you do to him the first time he came to see you?
I like that.
That's why he's never come back. Well, not come back. That's why he hasn't come back. And I was like, oh, that's just brilliant.
That is.
That's what fucking happens.
Anyway,
sorry.
That's okay. But yeah, so prophecy in the Bible is very clear that has been very heavily misconstrued and misunderstood, because they're expecting some guy to come charging in on a golden chariot with flaming armor and a flaming sword and destroy the Romans and do all this, because that's what they've been led to believe by misinterpretation.
Yeah, that's it.
And it's things like, I can't remember exactly, but I'm really rubbish with my Old Testament stuff. But there's somewhere in the Bible that talks about how the son of man or the son of God will come and he will rewrite the law, blah blah blah, and then when I'm so shit.
Blah 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 blah
blah blah blah, etc. etc.
etc.
So he will come and he will rewrite the law. But then there are moments where in the New Testament I think it's Saint Paul talks about Jesus coming and inscribing the law on men's hearts. So he does, but not how people think. And Jesus fulfills all the prophecies in the Old Testament. Who is that? Turn it off.
I can't turn it off. It's my work phone. Sorry.
You're not at work.
I know I'm not. No, actually, you're quite right. I'm not at work.
I am.
Let me put it on silent. Go away. Go away.
But yeah, and he fulfills all the prophecies of the prophets.
Yeah.
Despite what everybody, well, what all the Pharisees thought and said, just because he didn't fulfill it the way they wanted him to.
I think it's quite cool because it's just like Nostradamus prophesied loads of stuff.
He did. Some of it he got right.
And some of it he got right. And it's like, you know, I wonder when we stopped looking at people and going, oh, he's a fucking prophet, he is.
Well, so from a church point of view, it's actually quite sad. I speak about this quite often with Father Daniel, and he's on side, actually. He's a good egg. So when you had the whole kind of medieval dark ages, when the church went a bit nuts.
When?
And just started.
The church just is nuts.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. It's nuts.
No, it's not! You're oppressing me!
Not yet.
Not yet.
I might have to. We're all a bit nuts.
True.
All of us. It's great.
But yeah, in the Dark Ages, when the church went a bit crazy, and anything that was slightly supernatural or odd was branded heretical and witchcrafty and of the devil and burned. So, you know, we had this beautiful, rich tapestry of people having gifts of like levitation and
yeah.
healing people and biolocation and all sorts of stuff, and then all of a sudden, all of that was deemed evil.
Yeah.
So anyone with gifts of the Holy Spirit suddenly was bad.
Mm.
And as well, prophecy. So you have people with the gift of prophecy. Well, they're going to get burnt at the stake, aren't they? Or
yeah.
drowned, or beaten, or killed,
yeah.
or martyred, or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's sad. I think it's only now that the church is starting to open their eyes to the possibility. And I think it's only down to people like Padre Pio and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Who could biolocate, who did have the stigmata, that the church is beginning to open its eyes once again to the gifts and the fruits of the Holy Spirit, blessing people with certain attributes. I mean, everyone's got one.
Yeah.
But some are more prominent than others.
Yeah.
I think the
weird thing, however, is like that idea that it's an attainment of power, where actually it really isn't. It's almost like a sacrifice to that power.
What is?
Like the gifts of like prophecy and so on and so forth. Even within paganism, if you look at the stories of people who had power, even in like myths and legends, it wasn't a case of they had power, you know, power that they could use willy-nilly. It wasn't like that. They were almost subservient to the gift. The gift drove them, not necessarily the other way around.
Yeah.
They didn't turn up and do what they wanted with it. It took them and did what it wanted to with them as its vessel. It was quite interesting. I'd hate to be a slave to something like that. In any way, shape or form, especially with regards to... And that then rolls us back to destiny and fate. It's like if you have something of that monumental importance, that sort of like gift or whatever, that drives you, that is propelling you, that is your destiny, your fate, you are stuck with it, you know, and it just feels like a bit of a prison. And I can imagine it being very difficult, very, very difficult, and causing it. But I wonder whether that's something that only happens to people with faith, or whether that's the sort of thing that causes people to develop.
There's another corny faith. Saying in Christianity, which is, you know, what is it? God never gives us more than we can handle. So when you do get these people that are heavily devout, that are spiritually capable, and then they get given these very immense gifts, and it is a burden, and they do suffer.
Yeah.
What are you chuckling at?
Nothing.
Come on.
No.
Share it. Share
it just reminded me of a story. Just when you said that God never gives us anything more than we can handle, it reminded me of that line from True Lies where his son turns around and says something about my teacher said that beauty's on the inside, and he instantly, without missing a beat, goes, that's just something ugly people say. And it's like, aah! So it just reminded me of that, sorry. Just reminded me of that.
If the Lord can lead you to it,
he can lead you through it. Half and one, six a dozen and the other.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Come on, love.
Oh,
come on, love.
I can't quote Trixie. She's too good.
But yeah, so we do see that. So like Saint Bernadette, for example. Saint Bernadette. I was going to say plagued. She wasn't plagued with visions. She was given visions of the Virgin Mary. That... to the people around her made her act irrational. She was a very sickly child, and then all of a sudden she became well.
Yeah.
And then she started scrambling and digging around in the dirt, and then all of a sudden a well appeared.
Yeah.
Holy water.
Yeah, because you guys went and watched the movie. But
as far as everyone else was concerned, she was driven insane. They tried to cart her off and lock her in a loony bin.
Fucking right.
And then she got really sick later on in her life and died. So there's a lot of like physical burden that comes with these gifts.
Yeah.
And you do see it in the pagan world as well. People are driven mad by what they see.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The whispers in their head.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's there's a prophecy of... it's called the Ever-Living Ones. I've got it in the Mammoth Book of Celtic Myths and Legends. Peter Beresford Ellis. Where is it? Something around the there's a prophecy that the children of Danu will be driven into the hills, that they will no longer be gods. Here it is. The descendants of Mil who live in the island of Destiny to this day, called the children of Danu, the Aes Shi, the people of the hills. And when even the religion of Mil was forgotten, when the religion of the cross replaced that of the circle, the people simply called the Aes Shi by the name of fairies. And it's like their journey to Ireland was filled with trials and filled with war, and they won the war and blah 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 blah, blah, and they were propelled by their goddess, by their mother, but they were always destined to be shunned at the end. And they went through all of that, all those trials and tribulations, only to end up in that place in the first place. Regardless of whether they fought against it. And I think that's kind of interesting, because you kind of think that paganism and Christianity are very divorced from each other, but actually it couldn't be more further from the truth. Because the ideas are very much similar. Our ideas don't span very far. They don't differentiate very much. You know, most creation myths are very similar.
Yeah.
You know? And that's quite interesting, that there's a divine will and great plan in your faith. But even like in that, the idea that, you know, it was never going to go anywhere anyway. It was always going to be different. And you could turn around and argue, well, that was because of Christian scholars. But then, you know, there was the idea that you were only going to get to the other world at the end. The whole point was to reach the other world. You know, and your journey in this life was to reach the other world. So you were destined to only ever live until you died, and then you went to the other world anyway.
Yeah.
And then you came here when you died there. And your destiny was to be locked into this ever cycling from one world to the next, from one world to the next, back and forth, constantly.
Back and forth.
Back and forth. Six to 12. And you were stuck in this. And you could turn around and say that that's a divine plan. But that's the ineffable, unknowable plan.
Ineffable.
Yeah.
There you go. Fancy words for fancy people.
Fancy words for fancy... Of which we are not fancy people. Not fancy people. But it's weird to think that we both have that sort of kind, like, thing.
Yes.
The old druids had the same sort of thing. I can't remember the word. It begins with a C and it's, like, spelt Q-Gunt or something. But the idea was that you were... And it was a very Buddhist idea, which is why I question it. That, you know, you started off in Anun, the other world. Your spirit then emigrated and evolved and became part of this world, Abred. And then you moved on to the next world. And then from that world, you could either cycle back into Anun, the underworld, or you could elevate to the last plane of existence where you would stay, like an elevated or like a enlightened being. And apparently it was a druid's...
What's that one called? Kygant.
Yes. Yeah, that's the one I mean. I can't say it. I've only ever seen it written down.
Okay.
So I don't know how it's pronounced. But, and I know that's not how you say it because it's Welsh. And I don't know how...
Well, I don't know the phonetic Kygant, values. So I heard Philip Carr Gom say Kygant.
Did he?
Yes.
Fabulous.
So we'll go with that.
Yeah. So they thought that they could, you know, transcend the cycle that everybody else was stuck in, which is a very Buddhist kind of idea. So whether that's only existed since Siolomgoan, or whether that existed before then, I don't know. Because then there's only two destinies. You were either destined to be part of the great cycle, or you are destined to transcend it and become something more. But what more is there if everything that exists is part of the great cycle? So, like, becomes a conundrum. And the idea of reincarnation as well. You know, you destined to just continue to reincarnate again and again and again and again and again and again and again. Is that it?
That sounds tiring.
It does sound tiring. I had the question asked ages ago. They said, like, what are you going to come back as? And I was like, I'm not. I think I'm done. And they were like, what, you think you're going to reach enlightenment? I'm like, oh, God, no. I'm not going to do that. I just ain't coming back. I don't want to. They were like, I'm not sure you have a choice. And I'm like, I'm not sure you get to tell me whether I have a choice or not.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you're the authority on this shit.
Well, I get to look forward to an eternity of service.
On your knees?
Always.
Oh, dirty bitch. Dirty bitch.
Servicing the angelic host.
So, does...
What?
Does your magical moment go against the idea of the great plan, then?
What do you mean?
Well, you asked God for things to change, and they changed. But surely that can't happen if it's part of the plan.
Unless it is part of the plan. Well, which then goes into what you were saying.
Well, no, which is a reflection on what you were saying anyway. But, like, so that's like saying that...
Even but no one knows what the plan is. So if God knows everything, then... I don't know. See, this is it. It's a mystery. No one knows.
The mystery of faith.
Precisely.
Boring.
No one knows. It is completely and utterly unknowable. So
you can see why they think it's heretical, though, to do things to try and affect change.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But this is why...
But then if the plan can't be known, what the fucking point is there in calling it heretical? Oh, I see where you're coming from now.
So, yes, you can ask for things, but then this is why certain prayers don't get answered. And it's why certain things happen. But there is...
No, that's not there it. Is also, you haven't paid your pennies in the
there
basket.
There is also the danger of people blaming God for certain things. So, for example, a man gets drunk, gets in his car, drives down the road and kills a schoolgirl. And everyone's like, God let it happen! Why did God let it happen? Well, no.
Sorry, do that again.
God doesn't control free will. God doesn't want slaves. So That man chose to drink. That man chose to get in the car. That man chose to break the speed limit. And because of that, the result of those actions is the death of a schoolgirl. God didn't make that happen. But what God can do is, through the tragedy of that event, God can work good things.
Sounds
you don't think so.
Sounds a bit gaslighty to me.
It's not gaslighting.
Sounds a bit gaslighty.
It isn't.
Your tragedy is just the path to healing. All right.
Just because you're bitter and twisted.
Well, we knew this.
So yeah, God doesn't cause the tragedies, but God can work.
Then who does?
People.
Devil.
No, people.
The devil.
No, people.
The devil.
People.
Devil.
People.
Devil.
People.
Devil.
You're a cunt. You're a cunt.
Oh, I know, but it's so liberating. Ooh, I've got a black belt in kung fu, so.
But this all started because I mentioned Judas at the beginning. Well, before we started recording.
You did mention Judas.
Because I was mentioning Judas, because Judas, the only reason, I mean, Jesus probably would have been crucified and killed anyway, but it was at the appropriate time. Jesus mentioned someone would betray him, blah, 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 blah. Then Judas betrays Jesus, and because of that, Jesus is sacrificed for our sins, and the good news can be proclaimed, and our souls are saved. Great. Mm. Without Judas, that necessarily wouldn't have happened. So, is it right to persecute Judas as the great betrayer? Yes, he did betray Jesus. But if it was to serve the greater purpose, is it right that we should persecute him and revile him in such a way? Especially considering afterwards he did try and repent and give the money back. And then the Pharisees wouldn't take it because they condemned it as blood money, even though they'd fucking paid for him to be killed.
Yeah.
But then they used that money to buy land to bury... I think they used it to bury Gentiles on. I'm not entirely sure. But they bought the land to be a cemetery for people.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's a difficult one. It's ineffable, is what it is.
Fuck's sake. I'm going to start throwing that word around at work.
You should do.
I should, yeah, definitely. It'll suit the job role. It's fine. It kind of reminds me of the tale of Ceridwen, with Morfran and... no. Who was the old man in the hut? It was Gwion.
Gwion.
And... It was Morfran.
Probably.
Was it Morfran? Anyway, because he was meant to keep...
An eye
on the fire, and he fell asleep, and Gwion put more wood on the fire, not knowing. Or was it the other way around? No. Gwion put wood on, and it overboiled.
Overboiled.
Yeah, because he needed the old man was meant to be the experienced one to stop the water from overboiling, and of course Gwion didn't know what he was doing, put too much wood on, couldn't regulate the fire properly, and it overboiled and he got the three drops. But it's interesting because it's just like, that's the mistake that was made, that's when it all went wrong, and it's like, was that destiny? I would argue it's bad management.
Yeah,
Ceridwen picked the wrong people, simple as, in a hut. She had a palace, she could have done it in a fucking proper room with proper people, like, and got it done properly, but she didn't. She did it in a hut on the side of a fucking lake.
Yeah, but she was the wife of a king, and I'm pretty sure his people wouldn't have tolerated some otherworld sorceress cooking up a brew.
You say that. It was at a time when the druids were in full swing, so there would have been druids. Get druid council. You know, it was a prominent thing, all the rest of it, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, because then Taliesin grew up to be, you know, a famous bard. You know, that's a whole generation of people. Like, this was in a... The conversation is that this is in a time when druids were prevalent. There were druids everywhere. I love the fact that everybody talks about Taliesin and Merlin, and no one talks about any of the other druids. And now my brain is going to fail me because I can't remember any of the names. But,
okay.
Anyway, but there were so many other druids.
Yes, there were. But then you've also got to take into account... like the tales of, who was it? I want to say Rhiannon. I think that might be wrong. The horse goddess who rode in...
Rhiannon.
It is Rhiannon. But she was... who's the dude that wanted to court her, but she was always faster than him? And then they had a kid, and then someone stole the kid and said she ate it. Is that the right goddess?
Yeah.
And they punished her for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite heavily.
Yeah. Right. They made her stand outside the gates and offer a ride to passers-by.
Yeah. Until someone was like, actually, no, this is your baby.
Until the guys...
She's 20.
She
wasn't that old.
Until the people who adopted the boy, the baby boy, then came to the castle, invited to the castle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they saw that they were related.
But this just goes to show that...
She was still queen, by the way.
Oh, yeah, great.
This whole time, she was still a queen.
Yeah, except now you've got loads of people getting to claim that they got to take a ride on the queen.
Absolutely.
Degraded.
Degraded.
Debased.
And, yeah. And she was... No, I can't remember.
Something but who's else. To say, like, if Ceridwen did that in her castle, that someone wouldn't take or seize the opportunity to fuck up? I mean, oh, maybe it was fucked up anyway.
Oh, actually, no, I think the reason she did it outside of the castle was because of the Vagdi, her son. She wanted to do it because her son was ugly.
Yes.
And she thought the only way he would be able to get ahead in life is if he was intelligent to make up for his grotesque face.
Bless him.
Which only a mother could love. And I think that's absolutely fucking brilliant. But I love this. I love this because it's driven by human emotions, human thoughts, and we are nothing if not products of our gods. Somebody was talking to me the other day about how the world has gone really, really funny, and I always think about how The Simpsons kind of like...
If anyone wants to look at prophecy and fate, you watch The Simpsons.
Yeah,
because
predict
things. Everything.
And you know what? The very notion that life imitates art is the thing I come back to every time. Life imitates art. Mm. Full stop. If you see it in pictures, if you see it in art, it's going to happen. Sooner or later, it will happen.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to be the first Harry Potter to flick a wand and kill someone. I cannot wait.
Are you going to Avada Kedavra?
I am going... In the way I feel right now, I'm going to Avada Kedavra a few people, but... You know, it is a case of life imitates art. There's a reason that phrase exists, and it exists in so many ways. You know, that sooner or later, we emulate that thing.
Mm.
And in some way or another, it plays out.
All right.
You know?
Give it 50 more years, we'll be living in Waterworld.
We will be. And that gives you another thing around destiny, you know, and fate. Are we doomed to just carry on repeating these fucking cycles?
Yes.
You know? Or is there any point to it? Is it ineffable?
Is it ineffable?
But I do like how...
See, you hated that word when I first uttered it, and now look at it.
Yeah, I know.
You're saying all the fucking time.
It just annoys me how it's used without... It's just thrown at... Like, if you go to church, for example, this is the thing that fucks me off, and... The reason I love my job and I fuck off everybody at work is because they go, we want to do this. And I'm like, can we make it normal and easy to understand? And they go, oh, wait, hang on, that's really hard. And I'm like, haha, yes, it is. And they go, why are we having this conversation? And I'm like, because you're talking about like delivering information to people of varying degrees of intelligence, varying degrees of ability and varying degrees of experience. And you want to make it so that the managing director can understand it just as much as the 80-year-old volunteer who, you know, has been a secular Salvation Army goer who knows nothing of the world and whose idea of a computer and a mobile phone is, oh, I only turn it on when I need it. You know, like, you need both of those people and all of the people in between to have exactly the same level of understanding, which means you've got to speak in plain English.
Yes.
And in a church, you have that same dynamic. You have a very, very broad dynamic of people. So why would you use the word ineffable when you could just go unknowable?
Because it doesn't have the same gravitas.
Oh, who gives a fuck about gravitas? You need people to understand.
No.
Which is why the church is so aloof, because it's so up its own arse, it needs to be understood.
No.
You can't just go, it's ineffable, which means you don't understand it, because you don't understand the word ineffable. So you're never going to understand it. It just seems condescending to me, that's all.
I get it.
Professional head on, like, that just pisses me off.
There is a point where, like, words are important, language is important.
Yeah.
And so we have to use certain words to just give certain things an understanding, and if you use the wrong words and you make it too basic, then you strip things of their meaning.
Yeah. I suppose it's ineffable.
It's ineffable.
Anyway. Thanks very much for listening to Shove It Up Your Arwen. You can find us on Google or on Instagram or on fucking places or all over the place. Just search for Shove It Up Your Arwen, and you'll find us. We're on most things. And we're running out of time, so we're going to say bye.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.